Well, this hour we'll take your calls on synchronicity with Sky Nelson Isaac's latest book, Leap to Wholeness, and we'll be back in a moment with calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our phone call hour. I'm George Norrie. Sky Nelson Isaac's with us as we talk about his latest work, Leap to Wholeness. Sky, do you have to be a very positive person in order for synchronicity to work for you?
Not at all. No. Synchronicity is just how you interpret your experiences and how you make choices based upon your experiences. And sometimes that involves being pessimistic, being careful, being cautious. So it's really about balance and experiencing more flow.
Would you call this synchronicity? A bank robber goes into a bank, he's ready to rob the place, and it has an undercover police officer who's there as a customer who arrests him and thwarts the robbery. Is that synchronicity?
You know, I think it depends on whether they were there in advance, like they knew about the plot, or if they happened to be there on their lunch break. You know,
Lunch break.
Yeah, so that would be a synchronicity. And I think we can use that that phenomenon really proactively to deal with something like climate change, where we've got these really intractable problems that we can't figure out solutions for. And the more we pay attention to the whole picture, we can start to see the leverage points where we can make a difference that appear for us.
So are you saying, though, that the universe really contributes a lot to making these things happen?
Yeah, I think it's happening a lot all the time, you know, frequently to us, but we need to be able to see it and get our own ego out of the way, get our own filters, you know, a little quieter so that we can see, oh, what is it, you know, I want to fix this problem. The way forward might look, I might think it's one thing, but it actually turns out to be something else, and I got to be able to hear that.
Well, you do. You have to be able to see it, you have to be able to address it, and you have to be able to know what's happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think that the solution to climate change is, you know, rebates on solar, that might be your personal perspective. But by having a conversation with people who have different views, you'll start to see a bigger picture emerge of how to work from the whole picture of what everybody's feelings about the situation are and find a solution that works for everybody.
How do we distinguish the difference between true synchronicity and gut instinct?
I think it's kind of a relationship, you know. I think there's a mix of planning, careful planning and intention, along with, you know, paying attention in the moment to what kind of opportunities emerge spontaneously. And it's a balance between those two things that allows us to make use of synchronicity.
Interesting take. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a powerful human technology that we can start to make use of to, again, solve some of these really difficult issues that we face in ways that don't create new problems for people.
Give me an example of synchronicity, maybe a story you might be able to give us before we go to calls. Do you have anything?
Well, I was on the way to my final exam for a class, and I had a two-hour bus ride, and I was studying for the exam because I had left only enough time to study I had to study on the way there to get to be ready, and the bus breaks down. And so I'm starting to panic, like, what am I going to do? They get us off the bus. We're waiting for a new bus. I'm trying to study by the side of the road. The new bus comes and it's standing room only. So how am I going to study while I'm standing? But I don't give up. You know, I feel this fear, this tension in my body. I walk to the back of the bus. I sort of move around all these people. And miraculously, there's a person there who's sitting with a backpack next to them on the seat. Nobody's asked them to move the backpack, even though everybody's standing room only.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he says, hey, you want us to take this seat? So I get to sit down, I get to work for the next hour, and I'm ready for my exam when I get there. So it's about controlling the fearful reaction that we have long enough to find the solution that emerges.
How much of that was just great luck?
Well, it was luck. It was also me being not giving up. It's about persistence.
Right, being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and you can't be in the right place at the right time if you stop trying.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. All right, let's.
We stop trying because we get panicked or frustrated or scared, you know. So it's about controlling those responses.
Is looking at synchronicity in awe natural?
I definitely experience awe when I'm studying this stuff, when I'm looking at the way the world kind of weaves our lives together and brings us to experiences that uplift us and give us a bigger, you know, when we have our egos sort of out of the way, we see things with a cleaner lens, and it's quite awe-inspiring, this world that we live in.
Rose-colored glasses, right?
Yeah, when we can take those rose-colored glasses off and see, you know, the world with its struggles at the same time that we see the beauty of it, I think it opens our hearts.
We'll have some fun with these calls. Here we go. Wildcard line, Kim is with us in Clarendon Hills, Illinois. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Oh. Hi, George. Hi, Sky.
Hi.
Okay,
Thank
so
you.
My experiences with synchronicity are so profound. They really strengthen my belief in God because two times it saved my life. And other times it was winning $30,000 on a radio show after a dream. But I'll tell you the profound life-saving times. One was a skydiving trip I was going to be on. First time ever skydiving, never had been. And my friends talked me into going. And I was excited, but I kept getting a vision of like a Y formation in my mind. And in my brain, it kept saying dead or paraplegic. And then I tried to ignore those thoughts. It was just peculiar, and but it kept on happening. So anyway, I was scheduled on paper in the logbook to go on this jump with the owner, Tandem. And at the last second, I backed out, telling them if everything went all right with the jump, I would go on the next one. So while I was watching the jump on the ground, the owner collided with another person on that jump that I was supposed to be on, and he fell straight down from the point in which he collided with the other person, and he died. And I don't know what happened to the other person, but the guy that, you know, the owner of this company that had thousands of jumps, and he literally died on that jump. So that was one. Another one was my boss at a company I work for. He was extremely crazy, it seemed. I felt like his energy was really bad, and I felt like I needed to move away or transfer. And he fought my transfer, but I was finally granted a transfer after writing to the president of the company. And I used other reasons. I didn't, you know, want to get politically incorrect. Anyway, he shot and killed my direct replacement after I transferred.
Oh, my God.
At the company. Yeah, left him for dead in the supply closet. So those are negative ones, but also positive because I survived. And I listened to, you know, I listened to that intuition or whatever it was. And then the other ones that are more positive, I'll say, is I dreamed that I had won three and zeros, like I thought 3,000 on the radio. And I was having a, you know, struggling young person living in California at the time. Anyway, my dream said I won it on the radio. I literally won $30,000 on the radio a couple, like maybe 2 weeks later.
That's unheard of. That doesn't happen. Good for you.
See, that's why I say it strengthened my belief in God. None of this stuff was something I had pre-thought of. And then the last one I'll tell you is I'll go to sleep saying, you know, say my prayers. And before I go to sleep, I would get these names, like it happened only a couple of times, but really peculiar names, like Arnold was one, and I won't mention the other, it's very peculiar, but anyway, like the following day, I would meet that person, I ended up like dating them for a number of years, and it just really, you know, things I would never preconceive.
That's fantastic. Now, how do you address that, Sky? What's happening to her? I mean, these are miraculous things that have happened.
Yeah, and, you know, what I've learned over my time studying synchronicity is some experiences, you know, when they're so real and so painful, you know, the loss you experienced and the scary experiences and the people who have died and lost from those experiences that I think it's, you know, I want to avoid trying to explain those. I'm so grateful that you're here with us and grateful that you're okay. And I'm grateful that you found a way to trust your intuition and know what's right for you. I think it's really important to know what's right for us. And the more we can really stand up for what's right for us, the more we can get out of situations that are not right for us in so many different ways.
Sky,
so
for you, go ahead. Valuable. For you to answer this question, I have to ask you another question, and that is, do you believe in miracles?
Well, I try to understand miracles through this lens of synchronicity. You know, how could it have, you know, how do I sort of see something coming? Steve Jobs talked about connecting the dots in the past, like seeing how he went, you know, he took a class in calligraphy and then dropped out of school and then started Apple Computer and how that all made sense in retrospect. And I think we can start to see the context of our life experiences a little bit in the future, too. We can see where things are going. And that's part of what the caller Kim is doing is she's noticing her own inner reaction, how she feels about something. Maybe noticing some notions about like why am I doing this? I'm not sure I really need to do this activity, and putting that together to see, well, the right thing for me to do is to back out.
Let's go to Mike in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call. And
sure
I have to
thing.
Say you did an outstanding job on WBT today. I listened to the whole interview, so thank you.
All right. It's a long day, Michael.
Yes, yes. And, Sky, thank you so much for being here tonight. I had a comment and a question. So the first time you were on, you talked about, you know, regarding your first book, Living in the Flow, about this kind of this six-step process, about how we can get into that flow. And a couple of these steps that you outlined that really stood out to me, first of all, listen to your life, noticing the circumstances and the obstacles. Open your mind, and then reflect on the core things you care about in relation to the circumstances, and then kind of release or let go of the attachments that are holding you back. And when I went over these steps you outlined, it kind of made me think of my question, which is one step to kind of figuring out the meaning to why our synchronicities happen. Could it be as simple as just slowing down and being more mindful of what's currently going on in our life and how it can kind of relate to the past to better understand how or why it's presenting itself as a current synchronicity?
Great yeah, series of questions.
That's exactly right. Thank you for bringing up that process, the Lorax process. You know, one of the things that comes out of this notion, I think, about, you know, time being not granular but a line, is that that line is not necessarily straight. It can loop around in a sense. And I don't focus too much on the geometry of it. It's like not important to me, but the sense that it can repeat, that time can repeat itself and its circumstances, meaningful circumstances can come back, is I think what you're referring to. Situations can, when you become more mindful of what's happening in your life, you might notice, oh, I've been in this circumstance before. And if you can notice that, you can start to learn and sort of reflect on what you did last time, whether it worked or not for you, and how you can grow and change yourself and change your life.
Is it synchronicity, Sky? Let's say you were invited to a party and you had other conflicts, but you decided to go. And then you go to the party and meet someone who hires you for the job or something like that. Is that synchronicity?
Yes, I would say so. And, you know, ultimately, what I would suggest is that if you did something different, if you were going to, your other option was to stay home and work on your business, you might that night be working in your business and have a big breakthrough. So it's not that you made the right decision. It's that the cosmos is responding to the decision you did make and bringing you an opportunity. If you had made a different decision, a different opportunity would have unfolded.
Now, somebody would say this is just great luck. You would say otherwise, wouldn't you?
Well, I see the whole world this way. So I don't think of it as, you know, most of the time life is random and sometimes it's amazing and miraculous. I look at this as a spectrum of experiences where we're always experiencing these interwoven connections, and we should be less surprised by it and more just see it as part of the natural process of living in the cosmos, and then be welcoming it and paying attention to it all the time.
Next up, we've got David in New Mexico. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, gentlemen. And I have follow-up questions if you have time.
Sure.
And I want to, first of all, let me drop this because I think it's interesting and relevant. I have a cousin, Ernest Orlando Lawrence, who won the Nobel Prize in Physics yes. in like 1939 for inventing the cyclotron. And Lawrence Livermore and Lawrence Berkeley are named after him. He was part of the Manhattan Project. And then I want to follow up on the very first thing that you and George discussed regarding the time, the quantum physics aspects of time, or the non-existence of that, if that's the case. And I'm somewhat undecided, but I lean towards against the quantum physics aspects of time. I heard you state that people would experience time faster or slower depending on the speed at which they're traveling. And so let me take it to the next level and ask about time travel. If you're a fan of the possibility of time travel, or if you're more like myself, where I believe that that time is actually not a dimension. It's simply something that we can measure. We can't travel a long time. We can simply measure how far back or how far forward, if you follow me. So where do you stand on that?
I don't agree that time travel is possible, and I think you and I are the same on that. I don't see this as a way to, you know, jump forward or back in time. Yeah, so I would say I don't see it as a dimension in that regard. What I think is really interesting is the Greek notion of kairos. You know, chronos is what we think of as the clock ticking, and kairos is this element that's non-quantitative, where, tomorrow when you think back on this call and this program, you're going to remember how you felt about it. You're not going to think about exactly how long it was. You're going to remember the feeling that you had while you were in it. And so that is the sense of kairos. It's like, what is the opportunity of the moment? And that's what I think is a sort of an information theory-based sense of what time is really about, not something we can travel forward or back in and experience the future or the past in. So I agree with you.
And David, you had a follow-up? Go ahead.
Yeah, and as long as we're on that subject, very closely related is that same unresolved question, at least for me, as to whether it's possible to travel faster than the speed of light. And that's why I alluded to the other night, George, I believe that it is, although there may be things I'm not aware of, like the interaction of light against the craft you're traveling in if you do actually reach that speed. And so I wanted his opinion on that question as well.
All right, speed of light, Sky.
I don't believe we can go faster than the speed of light. I don't think there's any reason to doubt relativity theory. I think it's just as controversial or even more so that there's a holism to the universe, that there's a framework in which there's no space and time. That's a totally different and, I think, much more interesting question than whether we can break the speed of light, to which I think there's no evidence or promise.
We have Gordon in Plant City, Florida. Hi, Gordy, go ahead. Gordon, you with us? Nope, he is not there. Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina is. Oh, hey, Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought Bo did a pretty good job on the interview with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. My question, I got a couple of questions. One, I think that we don't have some free will, and we may have some and not some, and I relate to things like Sybil Leake getting on a train at 19 in France, and two lieutenants come in, and she and her friend are talking, and she said, give her your birthdays. One of them does. She said, my God, any other time you'd be king of France. And then 25 years later, she's a nurse or whatever in England with World War II, and they send her to Allied headquarters, and somebody taps on the shoulder, and she turns around, and he says, there's no France for me to be king of. It was Charles de Gaulle. There's some other Nostradamus. He had a medal. They dug his grave out of the wall. He chose to be buried in a wall in a church, and they were redoing the church. He knew that would happen. He had a bronze medal around his skeleton neck that was 1803 or whatever the year that they opened his coffin. So to me, I mean, how do they? That's got to be non-free will. And the other thing I was going to ask you is the speed of wormholes with the woman who wrote A Wrinkle in Time and camped out with her kids as a way to travel faster than the speed. And you just said something about there may be some sort of framework. And what does that have anything to do with string theory? And could you mention something about string theory?
Hold on to both of those, Sky, when we come back. Stay on the line, Eddie. We'll get you to do a brief rerun on your questions for Sky when we come back in a moment. Sky Nelson Isaacs with us. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His book we're talking about, Leap to Wholeness. His previous book was Living in Flow. He was on with me a couple of years ago when we talked about that. Well, next hour, two special guests join me, Squire Rushnell and Louise Duart, as we talk about God winks and dog winks. Now, what are they? Well, you're going to just have to stick around and find out. And welcome back to our final segment. George Norrie with you, along with our theoretical physicist, Sky Nelson Isaacs. Let's go back to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina, for his two quick questions. Ed, give us a quick review, would you, sir?
Yeah, Nelson Isaacs, I believe I deal a lot with wellness, and so I believe in your ideas of wholeness and holographic. I think there's a holographic pattern that supersedes DNA and RNA in every cell, and that gives me a frequency which you're familiar with that beyond regular medicine that works phenomenally, in my opinion. And I wanted to get your idea on your string theory. Does that have anything to do? And I assume it doesn't, but with Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, with when she camped out with her kids one summer in the family and saw the stars and thought up the idea in the book she wrote of wormholes, where you could travel instantaneously through a wormhole much faster than the speed of of
light.
And then the thing about not things happening in the future that someone knows, like Nostradamus having 1803 with the metal around his neck, and even George's daughter foreseeing 911 with all the ashes, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
That these things are foreseen. So to me, there's no free will there. It's going to happen. And you don't know, but it's going to happen no matter what you choose. That's my. I want to get your opinion on those.
Okay, take the second question first, if you would, Sky.
Oh, I'm not sure I have an answer for the second question.
Okay.
It's a challenging question. I'm not sure how to connect those dots. Thank you for the question, though.
String theory and traveling through wormholes.
Yeah, so I love the book Wrinkle in Time. I think the theory that she came up with is quite creative. And I do remember that the evil entity, the it, really makes its living off of sucking out hope from people. So I think it's important to recognize that right now. We have to maintain the hope. We have to hold on to our autonomy, hold on to our collaboration, our ability to love and cherish each other for being on the planet together. It's essential. But as far as string theory goes, I haven't done any original work on string theory. That's something I studied in school. But my work is pretty separate from that. I would say if you want to understand the research I've done, which my paper was published most recently in Quantum Reports in December, called Space-Time Paths as a Whole. And it's a reflection of, or an extension, I think, of David Bohm's work on the implicate and explicate order. And his book, Wholeness and the Implicate Order, was one that really moved me many years ago. So, and his point is that there's a description of the world that is holographic or holistic, and that's really essentially, I think, based upon the mathematics of the Fourier transform being applied to as it is applied at the foundation of quantum mechanics already. We already know that to be the case. And so what I try and do is apply it even more broadly and more fundamentally and look at the consequences of that.
Let's go to Mimi in Midland, Texas. Hello, Mimi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is so exciting. It makes me feel childlike wonder. And I never noticed coincidence and synchronicity until I was 24 years old.
Why so long?
I don't know. Maybe I was just kind of dead out of sleep in my materiality at that time. But I'm not a positive thinker, and I'm not a negative thinker. I believe in right perception, which is above and beyond those two things. And a lot of my synchronicity in the last 3 years has been with this program. And I have a story. It's not my story, but it's in the record books. Several authors used this story, and it's probably one of the greatest on-record coincidences or synchronistic events that I've ever heard of. But it was a little church, I think in Illinois, but I could be wrong about that. And 25 members of this church belonged to the choir. They had a very serious, strict choir mistress about not being late. And one night in a week that they were due to practice, every single one of these people, one scorched a dress she was ironing, another had a flat tire. But to make a long story short, all 25 of these people, including the choir mistress, was late to this church. And because they were late, the heater in the bottom of the church in the basement blew up, and it blew that church to smithereens. They would have all been killed.
Jeez.
Had they been on time. And as a result of all of them being late, no one was hurt. Everybody was safe, and they went on to tell the tale.
And on the other hand, that's a great series of stories, Mimi. Thank you for that. On the other hand, Sky, we have this tragedy in Mexico where the top of a bridge collapses and 35-plus people are dead. They are all in the wrong place at the wrong time. How come synchronicity didn't kick in? Or maybe it did for some, huh?
Well, I think it's a mistake to try and explain everything from a simple set of rules like that.
Sure.
My heart is grieving for those folks that have died and are suffering. I think we can't start from the hardest cases and try and understand the connections, but we can look at the example that the caller just gave and be grateful for that, that luck, and you know, see it as a sort of synchronicity. I have a story just like that, actually. I mean, much less intense, but just a few weeks ago, I was heading to the mountains with my family for vacation. And, you know, usually when I go places like that, I bring a jacket because I get cold easily. So I'm in the car about halfway there, a few hours trip, and I realize I don't have my jacket. So I kind of go, oh, no, and I tell my wife, I think I forgot my jacket. And she looks at me and says, I think I forgot my jacket, too. And then my wife, my daughter in the back seat is reading a book, and she hears us, and she says, you know, I didn't bring a jacket either. So all three of us forgot a jacket. So at that point, we had a choice to, like, turn around and go back or just go with where we were going.
Where you're going, sure.
Flow, you know? So we dealt with that fear, and we sort of tolerated the moment and sort of kept going and just opened up and ended up being a beautiful week. We never once did we miss our jackets. So we got really lucky all together.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
My question is on personal flaws, Guy. If you look at a Swiss watch, for example, you know, it's got a lot going for it, you know, but suppose something goes wrong and you get bogged down in the complexities of how to fix it. You might need minor adjustments. You might need major adjustments. You're not sure. But at the same time, like the situation you just cited, you don't want to see yourself as a train wreck because you did something wrong. You forgot your jacket. You want to kind of go ahead with a positive attitude. Like, how do you deal with, okay, I'm in the fog. Do I need a minor adjustment, a major adjustment? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's what led me to write this book. You know, I'd written a book already on synchronicity, but the follow-up book was about, you know, what gets in the way of synchronicity, what gets in the way of flow, and it's the filters that we have on life, the way that we perceive the world and our biases. You know, if, in that moment with the jackets, in the past I might have felt like so anxious about it that I would turn around and spend the rest of my day going back and forth to home and, you know, waste a lot of time. And instead, you know, when we can notice that inner experience and manage the anxiety or whatever it is that we're feeling so that we don't cause further problems downstream, you know, that's how we can avoid those kind of negative experiences, by noticing what's going on inside of us and learning tools to manage it or deal with it in healthy ways and express ourselves, and then find ways to be able to trust more.
Gordon at Plant City, Florida is back again. Gordon, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George. Sky, a quick synchronicity and then a $64,000 question. One of my best friends, her husband, his first name is Nelson. I won't say his last name. And he just passed away one day before my father passed away, 3 years different. And he was born 2 days before my father, and he died being only one day older than my father, and that freaked me out. And this guy's first name is Nelson, and that's your middle name. So now the $64,000 question, how can you believe in macroevolution going uphill based on the fact that the second law of thermodynamics says without a God force pushing it uphill, it'll go downhill? In other words, we cannot even make a dinosaur, Sky, so how could the dinosaur get here without some sort of God force pushing it uphill? I'm going to stay on the line just in case you have a question of me.
Well, thank you for the question, Gordon. The second law of thermodynamics says that the entropy will constantly increase in any system. Disorder will increase. But that's for any open any closed system. For an open system, like a human being or any kind of animal that's evolving, we are exchanging matter and energy with the environment through obvious, you know, eating and other excrement and all that stuff, so in breathing. And that exchange of information is actually giving off entropy is collecting outside of us, but inside the system, order is developing. So you can have closed systems that or open systems, excuse me, in which entropy decreases locally as long as the entropy for the whole system outside is increasing as a whole.
Thanks.
So what that explains is, you know, we can have, with the laws of physics, we can have beings that become more complex over time through the laws of evolution without violating the second law of thermodynamics.
Linda's with us in Spokane, Washington. Linda, take it away.
Good morning, George. Thank you.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'll say good morning even though it's about 5 or 10 minutes till a.m.
You're good. You're good.
Okay. I have a saying, even though I don't fully understand it. Everything is nothing, just a bunch of geometrical numbers. Anyways, I was calling in to talk about synchronicity because every time doors have opened that I have thought were synchronicities have wound up getting me in a bigger mess, like I had a townhouse on the west side of Washington, the Seattle Auburn area, that that's the only place I knew. I grew up there. I knew nothing about any other part of the state. Anyways, I was trying to sell that townhouse because my husband left me penniless and the homeowner's dues wound up to be practically another half of a mortgage. I had my house for sale, townhouse, for about a month or so. It wasn't selling. And so I decided, I told my realtor, just take it off the market. I'll just stay in my money pit. I decided to quit trying. And a day later, she called me. She said, I know you want to take the place off the market, but I've got a couple that's interested. Do you want to show it to them? And I said, yeah, go ahead. Didn't expect anything. They fell in love with it, offered me top dollar. I tried to find a place on the west side, and because of the big corporations, Microsoft, Amazon, all of them, the housing was so expensive, I couldn't buy there, and I had a bug in my bonnet about Spokane, the east side of the state, the farthest end of Washington. So I had a realtor looking here in Spokane. All the doors started opening for me to move to Spokane. And I thought, this has got to be synchronicity, even though I didn't want to leave the west side.
Well, that's how it works sometimes, isn't it, Sky?
Yeah, I like to reconsider the notion that we have to create something out of nothing and reframe it as, how do we create something out of everything? What you're doing is looking, you know, when you take your thing off the market and then you find just the right opportunity emerges, that opportunity came out of sort of grace, you know, out of the possibilities. And you just had to follow your own gut with what was the right thing for you, and the opportunity came through at the right moment.
And I've always said, be ready for the opportunity or the synchronicity, because once it happens, once it strikes, let's say it's a job opportunity, if you're the best candidate for it, you got to be ready for it, right?
Yeah, and I think what this mindset comes down to is more about, what do you choose? How do you choose a world that works for you? How do you choose a world that's, you know, free of climate change issues or free of racism? And what do those choices look like on a daily basis for abundance in your life?
Sky, thank you for being on the program. Good luck with the book, Leap to Wholeness. Up next, more as we take a walk on the paranormal side on Coast to Coast AM.